You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for April 17th, 2015. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live just outside the Marco Rubio Mensa meeting, already in progress, it's The Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal. And genius at work, Blue Gal. There's genius at work here. Everybody be quiet. Marco Rubio's going to say something.
He's not only a genius, he's young and a genius.
He's young and a genius. He's the smart one. He's the smart. According to David Brooks, he's the smart one.
Let's start with Hillary, shall we? And then we'll talk about Marco Rubio.
Sure.
Marco Rubio.
You know,
all right.
I know that we like to sort of take the alternate track. The story's less told and things meta, but Hillary just dominated everything this week. So we sort of have to talk about her.
We have to sort of talk. Well, and we got a really good letter a few months ago that I saved for just this episode because it's that good.
You're so smart.
And it's a letter from Karen. And by the way, I can't tell you how many listeners and donors we have named Karen. Karen's are exceptionally awesome because we have a number of monthly donors who give $5 every month named Karen. I don't know what the deal is there, but you're awesome. So thank you very much. All right. So here is a letter from Karen. And again, this is one that was sent several weeks ago and I saved it so that we could read it at this time. Dear Blue Gal and Drift Glass, thank you for your podcast. I really appreciate what you do every week, and I love that you include your family antics. You guys rock. I do wish you'd stop trashing Steve Kornacki, as I really love that show. Aww. And I don't get why you have to hate on it just because your club ended. Okay.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's a fair cop. I think there's a huge difference between Steve Kornacki as well, just in terms of his approach to things. Mm-hmm. From Chris Hayes, but that's...
Well, can I offer a brief explanation?
Yeah.
Just very short. The liberal media refrigerator has 3 slices of pizza in it. That's all. There's nothing else. There's dust and cobweb. All the other shit's gone. There's a big centrist refrigerator way over here. There's a gigantic conservative refrigerator. Liberal media has 3 slices of pizza in it. And Steve Kornacki being put in there and Chris Hayes being pulled out takes a slice of pizza out of the fridge.
Mm-hmm.
So we're hungry. We're hungry for good stuff. And Steve, I'm sure he has a lot of virtues, but it's Meet the Press Junior, and we already have Meet the Press. So that's the reason why.
Okay. Well, we already talked too much about that.
Yep.
And Karen forgives us because she said, I guess you guys are humans too. Yes, we are. But here's what she has to say. She says, here's what I have to say. The question keeps coming up, but really, do you trust the Clintons? Mm-hmm. So I decided to answer it for myself. Here's my answer. Yes, I trust the Clintons. I trust them to be good at government. I trust them to be politicians. I trust them to make deals. I trust them to be populist. I trust them to be friends with the banks. I trust them to be thoughtful about foreign policy. And I trust them to be human beings. Mm-hmm. I certainly trust them more than I trust any other politically connected entity trying to tip the balance of my opinion or the motives of any of our big money media. I also trust them more than I trust the crazy people with big wallets and big microphones, those who appear to have preconceived prejudices, or who I suspect have issues with women, or middle-aged or older women. The important thing to notice, too, I think, is that there is always an immediate feeding frenzy. They're out for blood. It's so offensive.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks again for being such an inspiration.
Aww.
And I replied to her. First of all, I told her what an awesome letter that was.
It is.
I trust Hillary Clinton to have learned from her mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I trust her to have learned from her experience as Secretary of State. I think she is a different person. I hope she is from Senator Clinton from New York post 9/11. In which she was put in the position and perhaps loved being in the position of being belligerent against Arab states. Just put it out there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she visited more countries and got to know more people than any other Secretary of State in history. But I expect she learned a lot about the power of diplomacy mm-hmm. from that experience. And I do expect her to be thoughtful about foreign policy much more. I mean, she will blow away any of the clown car mm-hmm. candidates out there when it comes to international issues. And really, I'm appalled at how the Republicans are painting themselves. It really I have to be careful not to use the word astonished too much, but painting yourself as the party of war and bombing mm-hmm. at this point and repealing Obamacare. And mm-hmm. that's your platform.
It seems a bit. You'll win your base.
David Letterman said, I wonder which one of these candidates will fall to miraculous defeat against Hillary Clinton. You know,
well, that's to get you through the primaries. You have to you have to be that guy. And let's say that guy to get yourself through the primaries.
There is no Etch-a-Sketch, though, Driftglass. Certainly not anymore.
Well, there might be. The problem that, again, hat tip John Fugelsang for asking this question. The problem was the campaign staffer saying out loud, we plan to reset everything because, insert thought bubble here, our base are idiots who will forget mm-hmm. everything we say. And that always works. It really mm-hmm. does. It always works. As long as the mainstream media is willing to go along with the gag, and pretend that, you know, all those people in funny hats aren't Republicans. Where do they come from? As long as they're willing to do that over and over and over again to no consequence. Bill, who was on Morning Joe this morning when I flipped past it? Bill Kristol and Harold Fraud Jr.
I'm so glad I slept through that.
It was just, of course, and my thought was, of course they are. Of course they are, because Bill Kristol is part of the club. And it doesn't matter, because as long as he has a platform, he gets that credibility of being on television lent to him. So there's a certain degree to which you can reset your policy immediately after the primaries, as long as nobody mentions it, as long as no one brings it up and says it out loud, then you have problems.
And you said this is week 7 of us not talking about Bill O'Reilly.
Where did Bill O'Reilly go?
It's week 2 of us not talking about Mike Pence.
Right.
Mike Pence just got off.
O'Reilly who? No, gone. Gone. The only people still hanging on that are those pedantic liberals who, you know how they are. And the rest of everyone's moved on. Bill O'Reilly's going to keep his job, as he always will. The Roger Ailes hate machine will roll on, as it always does. And in keeping with the mini fridge analogy I accidentally used a few minutes ago, I want to direct everyone's attention, if at all possible, over to a wonderful article at the Charlie Pierce magazine thing about Amy Goodman mm-hmm. and the first great debate. And he says, you know, she performed an invaluable service, having a real honest to God, heavy duty debate about Hillary Rodham Clinton versus pretty much everybody else. Mm-hmm. And what was striking about this, and this is not in his article, this is me talking now, is this sense that, you know, we have the political mini fridge, and in the political mini fridge we have stale cheese and we have rat poison. Mm-hmm. And those are your two choices. And it's this weird sensation, especially on the left, especially among my brothers and sisters on the left, that there must be cake in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. If we just rattle the fridge and yell about it and stick our hand in there, keep opening the door over and over and over again, eventually there'll be cake in there. And then you open, oh crap, there's stale cheese and there's rat poison. I'll close the fridge. And then you putter around for a few minutes. You know what? I bet you Rand Paul is like cake, almost like cake. And oh no, he's not. He's rat poison. And this constant and that moment when you close the refrigerator door on the left and forget that you have two choices is that moment where I get very frustrated. Because it's this bill of particulars against the candidate. And the candidate might be Barack Obama. It might be Hillary Clinton. It might be anybody. Most of which I will agree with. But then we get to the real world part where it's, and what's the alternative? And that's where it always gets very speculative. And well, you know, if, and that's where this article is really good. It's, you had a journalist named Robert Scheer being directly confronted by Joe Connison. And mm-hmm. whatever you think of either of them, the idea that it was really good because Connison sort of backed him into a corner because Scheer kept saying all these wonderful things about Rand Paul that aren't true. That mm-hmm. if he were only this way, then he'd be this way. But he's not that way. Here's what he did, and here's what he said, and here's what he's actually done. And it's that sort of magical thinking that takes over in the political season.
Well, if Elizabeth Warren was running, then we have. Running.
If only we could harass her and force her and threaten her and berate her and blackmail her into running, then I think it would be awesome. And
or raise enough money so that she just have to run.
$3, $3, $3. And I do have a semi-serious suggestion here I'd like to make.
This is something, by the way, guys, that we discussed at breakfast this morning. Mm-hmm. And you know how much I hate podcasting about Glenn Greenwald.
Right.
But I thought this was an amazing idea. Yeah. And I say that. I'm going to say that, Driftglass. Go ahead. Please. Tell us your idea.
Well, the idea is very simple. I'm not going to comment on the virtues or vices of Glenn Greenwald at all. Glenn Greenwald is an attorney. He's an accomplished public speaker. He has a public profile that is global. He's been, you know, on every television station from Russia to China. Pardon me?
He has name recognition.
He has instant name recognition. He has, as I said, he has a list of issues that he passionately believes in. He's been on the record on. And he's a U.S. citizen. He's of age. And he has a pet billionaire. He has Pete Omidyar, who is willing to give him $250 million to start a media company, which has had, let's just say, its fair share of problems.
A checkered past, yes.
Checkered
present.
But if you line all those things up, he has certain issues he believes in passionately. He's willing to burn to the ground anyone who disagrees with him, which I think is a vital thing to have in a debate. He certainly would.
He's right on a lot of issues as far as I'm concerned.
He is, absolutely is. And he stands outside the political process and constantly bitches about how everyone in it is corrupt and horrible. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, he is an outsider. That's true.
Yeah, but he doesn't have.
From the standpoint, compared to Marco Rubio, he's an outsider.
He I remember him tweeting or whatever, chortling with glee over the thought of a Clinton Jeb Bush election, because that would show what a horrible, horrible, corrupt, awful place America is and how it's just the shittiest place on earth. Okay, I take you at your word that you believe all of that. You can either stand outside the process and bitch about how everyone in the process is not as pure as you are and how they're all awful and corrupt and everyone who votes for anybody who isn't your choice is a sellout, which is an option. It's an option that a lot of people on the left seem to enjoy fiddling with. Or you could run for president, Glenn. You could actually do it. You have.
And this is the part I thought was really brilliant. And I say this with absolutely no animosity whatsoever toward Glenn Greenwald. I will wish him a happy birthday every year because whatever. He's not on my radar as somebody I want to spend a lot of time judging in one way or another. That's my personal Driftglass, I personally feel that those that get angry and agitated, that's the word I'm looking for, agitated about Glenn Greenwald belong in a dorm room at 2 a.m. sausage festival. It's all guys who've all had a few beers and you're screaming at each other about Glenn Greenwald. And that's just not my scene.
Right.
I'm just not going to go there. Mm-hmm. But like you said, Glenn Greenwald has a package of resume and money and name recognition and issues and constituency.
Absolutely.
Where draft Glenn Greenwald for president. I can see that.
Yeah, well, and here's the thing. He has a foreign policy portfolio. He hasn't taken any votes on foreign policy, but he's made his foreign policy positions very clear. He hasn't reversed any of them like Rand Paul has. He hasn't sprinted away from them. He has definite views on immigration. He has very definite views on how the U.S. government operates globally, and he has ideas on how that should be reined in. He has stands on every issue you can think of. He has the qualifications to do it, and he has a platform that's bigger than anybody else. And frankly, Elizabeth Warren has been saying for months now, I am not running. And the creepy people on the left who keep sending me fucking emails asking for $3 keep insisting, but we just found a guy who thinks this is a great idea. Won't you please reconsider, Elizabeth? Which at this point is beyond stalking. And is now actively, you're in her apartment banging on the bathroom door and she's telling you to go away and you won't do it, which is incredibly offensive and creepy and hostile. And I know you don't see that because it's Elizabeth Warren. If only she'd run, all my fantasies would come true. Plus, it's an opportunity to send me an email asking me for $3 every 20 minutes. But every qualification other than elected office, everything that you find exciting and interesting and noble about Elizabeth Warren, all of which I agree with, Glenn has. He has all those free, virtues. He's taken bold stands against the banks. He's taken bold stands against American foreign policy. He has money behind him. Now, I don't know if his pet billionaire would front him another $250 million to run for president. But isn't it worth asking about? I mean, if you're willing to collect $3 from me to try to harass Elizabeth Warren into doing something she does not want to do, why not give it a try? Well, and I'm being really serious. I'm not being facetious in any way. I'm saying that he has everything you need to run for a president, including access to big money. So why is he not being drafted by the same people who are stalking Elizabeth Warren?
It's a good idea. It's a good idea. Yep. So just throwing that out there.
You heard it here first.
You're throwing that out there.
Uh-huh. And I will be your campaign manager, Glenn.
No, you won't.
10% in cash.
No, you won't.
No.
I won't let you run for anything or do anything that involves political campaigning.
I have kids.
You have kids, and that's just not going to happen. Yeah. All right.
Sorry. See? my wife won't let me run for president.
Exactly. and I wanted to say something about that guy on the YouTube who liked his Obamacare.
Yes, yes.
Everybody's seen that by now. But I was kind of shocked that the commenters at YouTube, who traditionally are absolute bottom feeder, you're so gay, you know, ugly, ugly comments, were kinder to this guy overall, as far as how far down I scrolled, than Crooks and Liars commenters. And this video was posted at Crooks and Liars, and the commenters really wanted to denounce him for being greedy. And, you know, you weren't for Obamacare until you needed it,
right?
Blah, blah, blah. And not really understanding that when someone agrees with you, you've gotten to say yes.
Yes. Yes. No, that's...
And encourage him to continue to say yes. Mm-hmm. And maybe talk to him about, you know, Fox News has been telling you about death panels for how many years now? And uh-huh. Obamacare is terrible for how many years now? Are you using that as your news source?
Because he was willing to say the Republicans have done nothing for me for 15
years. For me.
Years.
And on video.
Mm-hmm. And this
on a video channel that he created that is a Tea Party channel.
Yep. And he's a registered Tea Party independent, and he voted. And let's be clear, one of the subtext was obvious, and he's voted Republican for the last 30 years.
Yeah.
So there's no the Tea Party and Republican Party. There is no Tea Party, but he self-identifies as a Tea Party member. Mm-hmm. He is your crazy Uncle Liberty's drinking buddy.
Yep.
I did
chuckle a little bit when he said. He talked about Obamacare allowing him to retire because he could afford health insurance and the insurance. He was allowed to have retirement from his employer, but the insurance was going to cost him $1,100 a month, which is prohibitive. Let's face it.
For him and his son, which, you know, he's also a single parent, apparently, if it's him and his son. And he has health problems. So welcome to the middle class. That's what the middle class looks like.
Exactly right. And he could afford insurance via the exchanges and could retire. Mm-hmm. Which is the American dream.
Yeah.
It's not the American dream is not work till you're dead.
No.
So, but I did chuckle when I heard him say, without Obamacare, I'd have to go back to work and work until 65 when Medicare kicked in.
Yeah.
And as if you can vote Republican for 30 years, still trusting that Medicare will be there for you when the Republicans' budgets have slashed Medicare how many times, you know? The Ryan budget. You still voted Republican when the Ryan budget came out. Wow. Well, you know, but now, so I do think that purchasing insurance through the exchange, that experience makes it real for people.
It does. And him going to a doctor, to an emergency care center for his son, which he said he did, go buy drugs.
Yeah, you've watched more than one of his videos.
Yeah. Yeah. He's taken his son to he's gone to, you know, his prescription drug is $20 out of pocket. I took him to the, you know, emergency, whatever, alert care, not the emergency room, but whatever the quick walk-in place that you go to when there's a problem.
Doc in the box is what we call them.
$30 out of pocket. And he said, which is reasonable. That's reasonable. And the idea that he was going to have to, and don't buy a bronze plan, he said, because that's for young people who are never going to get sick and are obviously, you know, never go to a doctor. He said, but I have health problems and, you know, my son needs health insurance and it was perfect for me and it was easy and I'm on it. And there were problems and there's this because his big problem was for tax purposes, they sent him a PDF instead of an electronic file. So he had to retype it or copy and paste it. He said, which is nothing. That's nothing. Yeah. But he was a satisfied customer. Absolutely. I've been on there for a year and a month and was a satisfied customer. And at that point, again, not only have you gotten to yes, but you've gotten him to asking a larger question, which is
big questions. Exactly. And we want, and he is talking to a constituency that you want to start thinking about these things.
Yes. And that's the,
and they might listen to him.
Uh-huh.
They won't. Whereas they never listen to the Professional Left podcast and say, oh yeah, they're right.
Yeah.
They might listen to, you know, an overweight vet who's voted Republican for 30 years and is saying, no, I can't do that because I need this program. And they, and it is in, the thing is, it is so blatantly in their, in the Republican Party platform to repeal this program.
Right. Which you,
they're being blatant about it.
They're clear about it.
You cannot, you cannot say, well, they're not really, they don't really mean it because they keep saying it.
Yeah. Like that, that's what they're running on. And
yeah,
you can't say it's an alternative, but I mean, if you're a Republican, you can say all those things because you can just get away with murder on the Republican Party. You can lie all you want and nobody's going to hold you to account for it. The thing I would do if I were a person who did not want to shit all over someone who looks like he wants to at least consider, because he said, he didn't say I'm voting Democrat, and he corrected himself. I mean, Democratic, which I thought was adorable.
Yeah. These are other videos. This is not the one that's got made root. You've been watching.
I checked out a few others. And the thing he said was, I'm not going to necessarily, but I don't know who I'm going to vote for. I genuinely don't know in 2016 who I'm going to vote for because the Republican Party just seems hell-bent on rolling back the Obamacare. And I think it
would be great. And is he going to vote for a Republican senator? Is he going to vote for a Republican Congress and think that he's doing enough?
So the next question I would have, if he and I were at a bar and having a beer and we were having this very pleasant conversation, and I recognize that he is very, very far to the right of me, but he is not of the body anymore. He has something, you know, he's broken. He's not out of the matrix yet, but he's aware that something is wrong with his universe. So the next question I would have is, well, okay, why do you think everybody thinks Obamacare sucks so bad when you're obviously it doesn't? Is it maybe because the people that they listen to on television and radio keep telling them stuff that just ain't so?
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think?
Where are those death panels? Have they come yet? Have you seen one?
Maybe it would be a good idea to turn off Fox News after a while. And maybe you should stop listening to, because those are the people who've been telling you this. I mean, the Republican Party's been saying it, but boy, howdy, their megaphone is certainly Fox News. And maybe Fox, and you know what? Maybe they've told you things that aren't true about other things, too. Because this is a pretty big thing. It's pretty important. If they lied to you about Obamacare, what else have they lied to you about? And then if you can get them that far, you can start asking them questions about, why do you think there's such a big deal in the media about how both sides are wrong about everything? Because clearly one side's right about this, one side's wrong. And yet if you go on any of the mainstream shows, you'll never hear that. You only hear how left and right are equally wrong about everything all the time. And again, I'm playing fantasy baseball here. But this is the progress you can make if someone finally breaks free of their conditioning long enough to and you've been saying this all along, Blue Gal, about young people will stop voting Republican when it stops being cool.
Yep. And when there's peer pressure.
And when there's peer pressure. And other people will stop voting Republican when it affects them personally.
Yeah.
When you can draw a straight line between the people we've been telling you are out to fuck you over are now fucking you over. Now you can feel it. Now you can feel the knife going in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And maybe you want to rethink this support of those people because they've been doing this for 30 years. But they've just
Our governor, this is where I start to get depressed because Bruce Rauner, the governor of Illinois, disaster capitalist.
Governor Hedge Fund. Yep.
He's cutting programs left, right, and center.
Mm-hmm.
He's cutting current budget, stuff that's already been budgeted, already been planned for. And you had a wonderful comment on your blog.
I did.
About this.
I did.
Where he cut the autism program on World Autism Day.
Yeah. It's a statewide program.
Yeah.
It helps people all over the state. He cut.
And it helps parents of children who cannot be mainstreamed into the public school system, which means it's bad.
Right.
And everyone who has any connection, as we do, to the autism community knows it is a spectrum. There are people that are moderately affected by autism. In fact, the studies that are coming out now are saying it's not one thing. It's nine things. It's 12 things.
Yeah.
And the brain cells are affected in different regions of the brain. And, you know, it's complicated. And so the children that are being affected, who are being helped by this program, in Illinois regarding autism are children that are at the low end of the spectrum, who cannot be. And let me say, there are children who are deeply affected by autism who can still go to school, can still go to a mainstream school. And a school with typical children in it, with children who are not affected by autism, is actually very beneficial for children with autism. To be around normal kids is a big deal for them and really helps them learn social skills. One of the main early interventions for autism is you get them in a preschool where half the kids are normal kids, at least half. And
neurotypical, if you will.
Neurotypical children. Mm-hmm. And then you teach these autistic children through habit and routine and structure, what it's like to be a student, how to go to school, mm-hmm. how to sit in your desk, how to transition from one activity. You're going to go to music class now, but they make it very predictable. There's pictures. If you're nonverbal, there's pictures of what you're going to do next. So your world is predictable. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of experience with this, as you can tell.
Yes, you do. But now, you hit on
the
two
comment
words.
At your blog. Oh, go ahead.
You hit on two words there: predictable mm-hmm. and stable.
Yep.
What happened?
And the rug has been pulled out from this program.
Boom. And I want to emphasize this, not just next year's budget. This, the Governor Hedge Fund has,
in the middle of the school year,
has just decided, no, all the current grants, all the stuff you're spending right now, boom, that's all gone too. Bye-bye. Yeah. And
Because we have a disaster on our hands with the budget. So that gives me power to just wipe everything out.
Got everything. And by the way, I know I didn't mention this when I was running specifically, I'd do this, but fuck you. You elected me. Ha ha.
He didn't mention this to the legislature, and the legislature passed certain things with the understanding that certain programs were not going to be touched. And it was passed in bad faith, just absolutely in bad faith.
Sure. Because why wouldn't you?
And the commenter at your blog mentioned that she is in the autism parenting community in Illinois.
In Southern Illinois.
Said she knew plenty of other parents in the autism parenting community around her area who voted for Rauner.
Because
he's going to go after all those bad Chicago people.
He's going to put it to
You know what that's code for?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Of course you do.
Those people, the moochers.
The bad Chicago people, and Rauner's going to leave us alone because we're the good ones.
Right.
This is a good program for good people.
And not the bad, moochy people with the melanin problem.
In Chicago, in Chicago, if you know what I mean.
Yes. And he didn't.
And it turns out he didn't. And I want to connect this disaster capitalism story to what happens when you just cut.
Oh, can I
you want to talk about autism more?
There's a second program that was featured today in the paper, the quitting, the tobacco quitting program.
Oh my God.
It's a quit line. It's several million dollars for a hotline for people who want to quit smoking. That's gone.
It's just millions of dollars, but it helps people in Illinois quit smoking.
And tobacco related illness costs Illinois Medicaid, I believe, $1 billion a year, some insane amount of money every year. So getting people to quit smoking is, in the long term, a really smart investment. This is a program that staffs a helpline where people who've finally gotten up the courage to say, I really need to quit smoking. I really need help. That's where, of course, you have to do it on your own or you're not a good libertarian. But you need help quitting. And now those phones have gone dead. They're gone dead. And here's the thing about programs like that. This is maybe Governor Hedge Fund doesn't understand how things work in the nonprofit community because he's a capitalist. But in the nonprofit community, your budgets are always very thin and very tight. And you're always really careful about spending your money. And you even budget 2 years in advance because you never know when some asshole is going to come along and cut your shit up. And you have to have a little set aside. The asshole has now come along and fucked your shit up. And now he's taking away the money you have in the current budget. So here's what happens to nonprofits that don't have $10 million in the bank to lean back on. Okay, first thing that happens is they lay people off. Mm-hmm. Those people go away. They find jobs someplace else. Once you break these programs, it's almost impossible to reconstitute them because the people, it's all personnel costs. It's all people. And once you tell those people,
but that's the plan.
Of course, it's the plan. Once you break these programs, once you tell people who are already probably not making very much anyway, that you're going to make nothing, you're all laid off. Bye bye. Bye bye. Which is sort of what happened to me. They go away. the programs vanish. They cease to exist, and therefore the funding problem stops. This is not something you can stop and start at a whim. It took years to develop these programs. It took years to build up personal and professional expertise, memory, a good case management profile, the professionalism of your staff. And once you kill that, you have to start all over again. And that's what he's doing. He's killing those programs because he doesn't want to have to fund them anymore because they're for moochers and not people like him and his friends.
And so what disaster capitalism leads to from the standpoint of city budget, because we know from Ferguson that police departments found a way to fund themselves by giving tickets to black people.
Yeah.
And it turns out this police department, where was it, Kansas City? The
guy,
the 73-year-old?
Yes.
Untrained cop, wannabe? All he had to do was buy police cars for the police department and fish with the chief of police. And I don't know if you realize this. This just broke this morning. All of his training records that he was trained for 400 hours and so forth. Those it's possible that those were falsified.
Oh no, really?
Yeah.
Well,
it's also possible that people in the police department who refused to falsify the records for him were transferred to less desirable jobs.
Oh no! Just buy him a couple more cruisers and we'll smooth that right over. This is the guy who couldn't tell the difference between a taser and a gun.
Taser, a bright yellow taser, and a weapon with bullets in it. Right.
Yeah.
And so this 73-year-old guy who bought a job that he was too old to safely and competently perform.
As
reminds
you said,
me very much of John McCain.
Yeah.
But he killed somebody.
Yeah.
And think about that, that here is the 73-year-old, and all he had to do was buy some police cars for the department. He is now permitted to carry a loaded weapon and a badge into your house.
On a sting operation, where he knows weapons are going to be involved.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, he knows because the sting operation was about selling illegal guns, by the way.
Yes.
And he's allowed to carry a loaded weapon and a badge into your house.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and you know that the police department didn't care because if you're white, he's not going to do that.
Well, and it really, it's like criminal tourism.
It is.
You know,
it
you
is.
Bought yourself a seat on a cruise line that's going to go to those dangerous neighborhoods. And you're going to get right up close and be right in there with the action. And
oh, God.
And then, boom, I killed the guy, but I paid for it. I paid him a ton of money.
Oops, I'm sorry. The video was, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I bought my ticket. And that's, there's a movie called Vintage Season, or a novel called Vintage Season was made into a movie about time travelers who come back and visit scenes of great disasters. And they take up residence. They rent space just across the street from where, you know, a meteor hits and kills a bunch of schools.
Oh, and don't they go on the Titanic just for a few hours and they get beamed off?
I think that might have been, but this was a small town where there was a double disaster. There was a meteor and a fire. And it killed a bunch of people. And these people just go through time into the past, and they know exactly where the edge of the disaster is going to be because it's all a matter of history. And they take up residence just outside the disaster zone so they can watch it happen. So they can be tourists. They can be disaster tourists. And that's all this is. It's some asshole with a lot of money who wants to play cop, who wants to take a tour through the criminal justice system and get to play with guns. And if you write enough money, and this is what privatization looks like. This is what it looks like. It's, we don't need any regulation or training. Fuck that. We have money. And money is a proxy for morality and competence. Therefore, why not let him write a check and ride along? And somebody gets killed. But really, that's part of the fun. That's part of the fun of Jurassic Park. The dinosaurs are real.
Yeah. And then that's what happens when money becomes speech, is all of a sudden you get to play at running entire countries and running entire foreign policies and running ecological policies in terms of coal. You know, you get to decide, don't sign, you governors, as Mitch McConnell said, don't worry about any of these EPA regulations, because, you know, once Obama's out of there, we'll get all that undone. So you don't even have to obey clean air policies.
Nah.
Because money. Give money. All right. That's our disgust, our disgust section of our show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to read a letter from Rob. Rob is an awesome letter writer. Thank you, Rob, from New England. And he wrote us a letter. Hello, Driftglass and Blue Gal. I am appalled that although I've been a completely loyal listener since summer of 2012, I haven't yet forked over any loot. So here's some loot.
Yay.
And we've heard from a lot of listeners, probably four listeners in the past 3 or 4 weeks, saying, I finally got my income tax refund. Mm-hmm. And we totally understand that. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sending us $5 or $10 out of that. We appreciate it so much. We know what that's like. So here's some loot, he says. On a related tangent, I find it curious that in the time I've been out of work, the last year or nearly, my charitable giving has actually gone up. Maybe a scientific study is in order. And actually, there have been scientific studies done on that. And the people that give the largest percentage of their income to charity are single women making under $30,000 a year.
Really?
Yep.
It doesn't surprise me at all.
Not at all. Nope. Because they know. They know what it's like. And the attitude of gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
I remember being on welfare, being on food stamps and fuel assistance, and taking coins with the children up to the Salvation Army kettle. And yes, I know there's gay issues about that. And, I'm sorry about that. But giving to charity in front of the children to say there are people in this world who are worse off than we are. And you give. That's what you do. Here also is a keep fighting the good fight and saying what's got to be said. Although I now know far more about David Brooks than I frankly ever wanted to know.
My pleasure.
It's startling how often, as I listen to the two of you, I complete your sentences right along with you. And I react rather poorly now whenever any real conversation I'm involved with veers towards both sides. No, 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 he writes. As a Methodist church musician, we officially love you now. I'm particularly interested in Blue Gal's Bible Bitch segment. I gently describe the Bible Bitch segment and then its title to a couple of our more congregations experienced members, and to my surprise, they burst out laughing. Well, okay then. Although our congregation on average leans to the left and is certainly very heavily into dealing with social justice issues, do we have a congregation like that? I think we do.
Wow, he's sitting right behind us.
Yeah, the tightrope I get to walk involves a number of longtime congregation members who are former Raytheon employees. We're located near a one-time Raytheon Defense Electronics Design and Manufacturing plant.
Aha!
So these are retired Raytheon employees, I take it. Mm-hmm. On the occasions when the very fine local preaching touches on defense spending issues and such, I can sense the very polite shifting in their seats that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, here's how I know I'm just a bit attached to the professional left. When you described your flooded basement and when I read about Driftglass's most recent layoff, I've literally cried out, oh no, and I'm not that kind of guy. So stay in the batter's box and keep swinging. Sincerely, Rob from New England. Thank you, Rob.
Thank you, Rob.
Awesome letter. Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners, one of whom wrote to us and said this. Our 11-year-old daughter sounds so much like middle child, it always cracks me up when you talk about her.
Yeah.
Listen, there's a tribe, and you're not in it. We're not in it either. Mm-hmm. Our daughter frequently listens to Science Fiction University with me and would love to see her kitty, Madison, featured as Internet Kitty of the Week. Maddie, as she is known, was a homeless cat, tiny and malnourished when we took her in. She has trouble not gorging on food, and so when we put her on a diet, she just goes and begs food off the neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see in this picture, Maddie is what is known at my house as a Buddha kitty.
Mm-hmm.
She actually sits on her hind legs and sticks her belly out like a Buddha, and it's adorable. All is well with her, obviously. she's doing fine. So, Maddie, we're glad to have you as Internet Kitty, and your 11-year-old sounds like she'd fit right in at our house, so awesome. Welcome. You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go, Postal Unions! Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. Or if you need to, wait for your tax refund to come and then buy one for us. We thank you for sharing a bit of that with us. We so appreciate it. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address info is right there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that. Hey, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
You know, Blue Galley, Internet Kitties wonder why the hell Hillary didn't bring them any Chipotle.
Good question.
Yeah. That's a good question.
That's the question that would be asked at this house. You went to Chipotle?
Yeah. What happened? What? Are we going to Chipotle now? Yeah.
Can we go to Chipotle?
You know what?
That happens to be youngest child's absolute. She would give up a 5-star restaurant for Chipotle, wouldn't she? That's her endorsement. Yeah.
You know what? If we could just invite, instead of presidential debates, let's invite a couple of candidates over at dinner time.
Yeah.
Have them negotiate among the kids.
What restaurant we're going to take them
to. What restaurant or what food or who has to eat what or who gets to talk next or who gets to interrupt who or who doesn't get to interrupt who and what topic we're on. Yeah. It is a lively, gentle.
It is the 16-year-old boy who has some social deficits. Let's just say that.
And many opinions.
And many strong opinions, and then two tween girls who think he's an idiot and a buffoon, and who he interrupts. Let's face it, he does interrupt them with his opinions, and outrage is the is the emotion that is most expressed at our dinner table.
There's always outrage for dessert. So
outrage for dessert, yeah. And oldest boy will eat pizza and burgers. Mm-hmm. Middle child is a vegetarian who wants to go out for Bangkok cuisine, your vegetarian tofu.
Or sushi or something.
Or sushi something, vegetarian.
Which we do accommodate. We accommodate her vegetarianism and respect it as such.
Yeah, we do. And then youngest child would eat Chipotle every day, I think. Wouldn't she?
Yeah. Oh, she would. And I've got her making eggs.
Oh, yeah. You're teaching her how to scramble eggs, and she's getting pretty good at that.
Getting very handy at it. But there's always a very complex, fraught negotiation because, mind you, these are people, and I love them all dearly, who cannot remember their homework, but will remember a slight that one of them suffered at the other one's hands from 5 years ago.
That time that you got ice cream and I didn't.
Remember that time? And then it's suddenly we're in the middle of Palestinian-Israeli negotiations. Yes.
It's Game of Thrones.
Yeah. It's all...
Plus what happened in 1943. Yeah.
Right. It's 400 years of British oppression.
It is. Just...
And if you can come to our house and negotiate and navigate...
And I hate to tell you this, Drew Glass, but Barack Obama's a conservative.
Yeah. Goddamn conservative. And speaking of which, what fresh horrors, Blue Gal? You'll see this somewhere. Politico published a list of its I'm convinced it's timed to glide in draft behind, as they say, the Time magazine 100 most influential people. Politico published its 100 most influential journalists, I use that very heavily air quoted, on Twitter,
and and the rubric that they used was so stupid. Followers of followers of like networked people who know people. And if you have three followers, but they're all in the White House, then that puts you up the scale. Well, yeah, of course it does. Mm-hmm. But who takes the time to care about this shit? That's what I want to know.
Politico.
Politico. And that's your answer.
And they carved out a special...
How many inside the Beltway dicks can we suck at one time?
They had a special carved out category for inside the Beltway.
Yeah, of course they do.
Yeah, there was a left, center, and right, and then there was the inside the Beltway, and Chuck Todd was number one, and Andrea Mitchell was there, and Luke Russert was there. It was just like, oh Jesus.
And but David Frum was in the center.
I didn't realize this. The number one right journalist influencer is Michelle Malkin.
Well, because she has so many followers, that's it. She just has a lot of followers,
and it just gets
and flying monkeys. That's
and she's
who
a journalist.
She is.
And she's a journalist.
She's a journalist. That's Politico sucking dick. I'm sorry.
David Frum, Bush speechwriter who coined the term Axis of Evil, who
is a centrist. He's a centrist.
And liberal, I think 10th most influential liberal on Twitter was Andrew Sullivan. So there you go.
Wow.
I know nothing, Jon Snow. I know nothing.
I know nothing, Jon.
I have no idea how the world works anymore.
Exactly how the world works.
I do.
Works with Politico going mwah, mwah, mwah.
I sit in a pumpkin patch.
I love you, Chuck Todd.
Chuck Todd, you're so influential.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey dovin'. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Love Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2015, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Science Fiction University, this comes from our friend Lawrence in Phoenix, or PHX.
Oh, Lawrence.
And Lawrence wrote us and said, I love Science Fiction University. I haven't contributed enough to it, so here's 10 questions. And they all sort of have the theme of Westerns in space, which you and I have talked about before.
Ooh.
So that's kind of cool. Yeah.
All right. Cool.
Yeah, and some of these are kind of obscure, some of them not, but let's just try them out and see what happens.
Okay.
Number one, the following dialogue is from what movie? Quote, the next scheduled departure to the prison is in 2 hours. You now have the option to terminate and be cremated on the premises.
Oh, come on. It's either Escape from New York or Escape from L.A.
It's Escape from New York.
Escape from New York, yeah.
1981.
With Snake Plissken. Kurt Russell is Snake Plissken.
1981 is the year I graduated from high school. Mm. All right. And number two is related to this.
Okay.
William Gibson's Neuromancer, published in 1984,
yes,
might have borrowed two concepts from Escape from New York.
Oh, geez.
What
really?
Were
only,
they?
Only two?
I don't know.
That opened up a whole new genre. The only two I can think of offhand, and it's been a very long time since I've read Neuromancer. I remember that the Colonel, I forget his name, crashed. In a glider.
Armitage? And
I
remember, is that who you're thinking of?
Yeah, that's right. That's who it is. Yeah. He had the cold winter eyes. He had empty eyes. It was the one the computer was using. The plot is a computer wants to achieve a certain level of intelligence above the level that it already has.
Mm-hmm.
To do that, it needs a physical key and a physical lock, because that's how you stop computers. And it had engineered an entire series of events to make that happen. And the second one is fatal drugs, I think. Timed drugs.
Okay.
Timed drugs. Okay.
Yep.
That's how they.
Very good. You had both those right. The first one is glider. The snake uses a glider.
Right, to get in New York.
To get into New York.
Mm-hmm.
Armitage also did in Neuromancer. They both used gliders. Yeah. Snake had microscopic explosives implanted in his carotid arteries. They were timed to detonate and exsanguinate him if he failed to complete his mission within 24 hours.
Ooh, exsanguinate's a good word.
Yeah, and you know, that 24 hours thing is, it lends urgency to the plot automatically, doesn't it?
You need a ticking clock, you really do. The clock has to be set.
In Neuromancer, Case had toxin sacs planted in his body would dissolve and inflict crippling neurological damage if he fails his task after an allotted time.
Uh-huh. That's right.
All right. Number three, David Cronenberg's Scanners is famous for its exploding heads.
It is.
What Sean Connery space western explodes entire bodies due to sudden decompression? And you had it. I think you have this one after I said Sean Connery space western.
Yeah. Of all the Sean Connery space westerns, of all 9 of them or 10 of them.
No, I think there's only one.
There's only one. And I'll give you a little bonus. It's Outlander. The Outlander.
Outland. Outland.
Yeah, Outland.
From 1981. What a year for movies.
For exploding thing. And Harlan Ellison, as I recall, wrote a pretty brutal review of this movie.
Oh, he did.
Because it was supposed to be high noon in space, right?
Okay.
The sheriff has been abandoned by the town, is all by himself, and has to, you know, bring order to from the gangsters, from the outlaws.
Right.
Except In High Noon, it was a town full of, you know, bankers and grocers and, you know, mild-mannered people.
School teachers, yeah.
Yeah, they didn't want to know part of this fight. They were cowards by, you know, you can imagine they would not want any part
civilians.
Of it.
Civilians. They were civilians, yeah.
But a colony full of hard-ass rock miners on an asteroid belt has sort of selected out all the cowardly and weak ones.
I was going to say, like, oh, if you're on an asteroid mining for...
whatever.
Your courage is not your problem.
No. You can probably get four or five hard asses who wanted to help you with your mission of them killing people who were like you. Also, I think it was Roger Ebert. I don't know. But pointed out that this violates the stupid assassin rule of you hire the most potent and accurate assassin in the galaxy. And somehow every single fucking time he manages to miss the first shot, thus tipping our hero off to the fact that he's just right gunman
here.
Up there.
I'm right here and I'm shooting at you. Yeah.
The first shot is the most accurate. I hate to tell you, but
yeah, it has to be, because if you don't get him on the first shot, he's going to be shooting at you, obviously. Okay.
So, okay, yeah.
Outland was directed by Peter Hyams, Hyams. And scored by Jerry Goldsmith. Oh, that's awesome. Okay.
That's awesome.
But can you name any other science fiction film directed by Peter Hyams?
Oh, no. That's not fair. No,
he directed. He directed Time Cop.
Okay.
1994.
All right.
He directed 2010, The Year We Make Contact.
Which should never have been made.
Why?
Because 2001 left us with mysteries.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
That just like cosmic mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
Why did Al go nuts? And what was this thing? And 2010 just explained them all.
Oh, that's no fair. Oh, you know, yeah.
Here's the reason why that happened. I mean, it has some epic shit in it. Turning Jupiter into a sun and turning it into a mini solar system and starting the whole process over again. It was pretty cool. But there were some cool parts to it. But no, it shouldn't have been made.
And finally, Peter Hyams also directed Capricorn 1 with pre-white Bronco O.J. Simpson.
Yeah.
1978.
And I think James Brolin.
Oh,
I think
gosh. Yeah. That was the fake moon landing movie.
That was the fake moon landing movie. Yeah. No, that was the documentary that they about the fact that the moon landing was faked. Don't you know anything, Blue Gal? Chemtrails.
Did it have chemtrails in it? That's what I want.
You can see in the background. There were
all the chemtrails. Okay.
In the background.
We're going to get mail about that, you know.
Like.
Don't diss the chemtrails, man. They're real. Okay. Number five. Can you name, this is just kind of an open-ended question.
Okay.
Can you name some television and film science fiction properties that used the Western as an influence or episode motif?
Oh, shit.
Well, there's Outland. We know that one.
Yeah, Outland, so that's one. The Matrix. The Matrix is, there are parts of the Matrix
Western
that are straight
in space,
up Westerns.
Yep.
Samurais and Westerns. And since a lot of samurais are Westerns and Westerns are samurai movies, I'm going to go with Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
It has black hats and white hats. Boy, does it have black hats and white hats.
Mm-hmm.
Wide open spaces. I'm going to go with, if we can allow me a novel, I'll go Tunnel in the Sky by Robert Heinlein, which is literally the story of wagon trains going through, not quite wagon trains, but explorers going out to the great frontier and getting caught out there and having to survive. I'd go with Alien.
Mm.
Again, the wide open frontier, you know, you're out there by yourself, far from civilization, and you're fighting against unknown dangers out there, et cetera. And the whole, I mean, Star Trek itself, the Star Trek original series was sold as wagon train in space.
Mm-hmm.
There was an episode of Doctor Who with an android sheriff or a cyborg sheriff, mm-hmm. sheriff who's hunting a war criminal who had landed in a small Western town and was there. There is their doctor, and it was a town called Mercy.
All right. Well, here are the ones that Lawrence has.
Okay.
Westworld.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Good.
Directed by Michael Crichton. So
yeah.
Firefly/Serenity.
Definitely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Star Trek, the original series, The Spectre of the Gun.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. That was the gunfight at the OK Corral.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really a precursor of The Matrix.
Yeah.
Because the plot twist was, it was all a fantasy. But if you believed it to be true, you could die. Like The Matrix. If you didn't, you know, your mind could kill you. And the mm-hmm. only person who had the discipline to know for sure that this is a fantasy was Spock. I also think it was mm-hmm. they used like the cheapest possible sets you could imagine, just pictures hanging in the air and so forth, to great effect. I mean, this was, I think, third or fourth year. Third, no, there was no fourth year. Third year Star Trek, when they had no budget. Mm-hmm. So they just used what they were scavenging from the set, and they did a pretty good job of making that a virtue. Anyway, good choice.
Star Trek: The Next Generation, A Fistful of Datas.
Okay, sure, why not?
And then Battlestar Galactica 1978, The Lost Warrior, which pits Captain Apollo Richard Hatch against a rogue Cylon gunslinger who acts as an enforcer for a corrupt village boss. All right.
Gotcha.
So number six, the 2006 Battlestar Galactica episode Scar deals with a Cylon raider that has developed deadly Ace of Aces combat skill.
Dick Bong. Look up Dick Bong, people. The Ace of Aces.
What 1990s television space opera had a similar episode?
What decade was it in?
1990s.
Okay, I'm going to confess. I was a non-compass mentis during most of the time.
Okay.
I have no idea.
It is called Space Above and Beyond.
Oh, okay. All right.
1996 episodes Never No More and The Angriest Angel.
All right.
Have the human forces bedeviled by the seemingly unstoppable Chiggy von Richthofen.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with Space Above and Beyond?
Yeah,
did you watch any episode? Okay.
I caught two or three. I just never got into it. But
all right. Here's another question about that show.
Okay.
What service do humans in Space Above and Beyond fly for, and what is their ship?
Shit. Well, if it's a science fiction thingy, it's Earth Force or Space Armada or
actually his answer is the show primarily features U.S. Marines operating from the spaceborne carrier USS Saratoga.
Oh, now I was going to say carrier because I do remember a big flat deck thing. So I'm going to take it myself. I couldn't have guessed Saratoga, but I'm going to guess I knew it was
some sort of carrier. Okay. Number eight. The better-known 1990s television space opera, Babylon 5.
Yay!
You did know that one. Yes, well, you did watch that one.
If you're fresh to Babylon 5, ignore the first half of the first year because it was terrible.
Okay.
It's just terrible.
If you're gonna binge watch Babylon 5, you should start maybe
skip 10
episodes in.
Yeah, skip the first five and see if you like it. Once the shadows start presenting themselves, it gets good.
But that show, Babylon 5, had a guest appearance by actor Michael York in the 1996 episode A Late Delivery from Avalon. What science fiction film is Mr. York better known for?
Oh, come on, man. Logan's Run.
Logan's Run, 1976. That's right.
Logan's Run.
Number nine.
Now, do you remember who would in the very end, I'm not going to spoil this, he finds himself, I believe, in Congress.
Oh.
The abandoned United States Congress, which is full of cats. And I believe the human he finds there is Peter Ustinov.
Oh, wow.
Thank cats. Anyway. Yep. Oh,
right.
Remember. Yeah, anyway.
Number nine. Logan's Run also features Farrah Fawcett.
Yes, it does.
What forgettable.
All right.
1980 science fiction film did Farrah Fawcett appear in along with Kirk Douglas and Harvey Keitel? Wow, that's a cast right there.
That is not fair. Harvey Keitel and Kirk Douglas?
And Farrah Fawcett.
Yeah. Well, I know Kirk Douglas was in a Stephen King movie, The Fury. The Fury. He was good in it, too. That's one of the ones I use for trivia night because it's got a whole bunch of actors you wouldn't expect in it, like Dennis Franz and I think Daryl Hannah, but that's not the movie. It's not it. I have no idea what this one is.
It's called Saturn III. I've never heard of one. Okay.
Yeah, because the first two were so awesome. Yeah.
All right. Finally, number 10.
All right.
Saturn III is total shite, but it does feature a homicidal robot. What 1984 film features killer robots, not Saturn III, and get this, it was directed by Michael Crichton. And it stars Tom Selleck, Kirstie Alley, and the rock star Gene Simmons from Kiss as the villain.
Oh, man. I lose all my cred for not knowing this.
This has got to be one of the most tacky movies.
I'm going to guess if it's...
It's 1984.
Okay, and it's not The Terminator. Okay, it's not Terminator.
No.
It's possibly Future World, which was the very poor sequel to Westworld.
No, because Tom Selleck and Kirstie Alley weren't in that Future World movie.
It's called Runaway. Runaway. Oh, man.
And it's this... Michael Crichton wrote this movie and directed it. And it's got these, it's all the machines that humans in the future created to boil spaghetti and automate things for you.
Mm-hmm.
Gene Simmons puts he has no makeup on and puts a suit on to be the bad guy. And he has invented a chip that turns all of these machines into murdering machines.
Yes.
And Kirstie Alley is somehow blackmailed involved, and Tom Selleck has to save her from Gene Simmons. If you
does it have a soundtrack by Bon Jovi by any chance?
It could be Jerry Goldsmith.
Yeah.
Hard to tell.
Yeah.
But thank you very much, Lawrence and Phoenix. Those are good questions.
This was fun. Thank you, Lawrence.
And a trip down really awful movie memory lane.
Yeah. Yeah.
You wanted to talk for a minute about Mad Men.
Oh, yeah.
The episode of Mad Men, we will mention to people that there's spoilers on possible spoilers for Mad Men, but
there are no spoilers.
You're Watching It Wrong with Drew Glass is here, and you want to talk about Mad Men.
I want to talk about this last
episode of Mad Men, which was so sad.
It was so sad. They all lost.
It made me very sad.
He's surrounded by death and decay and disillusionment. And someone asked me about the conclusion of the show, and I will speculate about that perhaps on some later date. But I would direct your attention.
You know, if you put what you think is going to happen in that show in an envelope and seal it up, I'll hold it until, if you want to do that.
Well, the trick is you make 9 predictions.
And you put them in 9 different envelopes.
And then you say, and what was your answer? And you remember where each one was, and you walk dramatically over to the fireplace and pluck it out of the flue and say, was this your answer? He's a genius. And then you tidy up afterwards and destroy the other 8 that were wrong.
Yeah, okay.
That's how it's done. I would just...
Don Draper dies in his lab, in his meth lab, right?
He does. It was all a dream. It was all a...
He comes out of the shower.
It was a snow globe, and it was all a dream.
It turns out JR is alive, and he's still evil.
Right.
Yes, okay.
Yeah. He meets a nice lady named Rosebud, and they go on to...
He wakes up with Suzanne Plachet.
I had the weirdest dream. Yeah. He becomes the... He quits ads and goes into writing TV and becomes...
Yeah, happily ever after.
Yeah.
Right.
No, this is not going to add or detract from anyone, but there are 2 stories I would direct your attention to. One I'm sure is in print, one I'm not sure is in print. One is called, I believe, All the Chickens Come Home to Roost.
Okay.
By Harlan Ellison, which is the story of a man who starts meeting all the women he's ever slept with in reverse.
Ooh.
And he can't. And he figures out what's going on quickly and tries to avoid them, and they keep not being avoidable. And he's terrified because there was one in his past who nearly killed him and nearly drove him insane, and he knows she's coming.
Wow.
And so that's, you know, he can't get out of it. He's trapped in this thing. It's a bit of a cheat. He never actually gets to the end of the line. So I think Ellison kind of cheated on that one a little bit. Sorry, Harlan, but you cheated. You should have taken us there, and you didn't. But I still love you. And John Cheever. John Cheever has a wonderful short story. It was made into a film with Burt Lancaster. That actually was Joan Rivers' first film, if I remember correctly, called The Swimmer.
Yes, you've mentioned that whole story before.
It's a
who swims across swimming pools in New Rochelle, New York, or Long Island, New York, and time changes, right?
He wants to get home. The whole thing is he wants to get home. I bet I can swim across. And he's at a friend's house. He notices how all the swimming pools across the neighborhood seem to line up in kind of a river. He says, I bet you I can swim home. And what happens, I think, much better in the story than in the movie is that you notice that an enormous amount of time is going by. Not an afternoon at all, but years are passing. And he gets more and more disrespectable. And at the beginning, he's just one of the guys having cocktails in his backyard and with friends. And by the end, he's sort of begging money at a public pool, I think, so he can make that last leg. And it's a 70-year-old story. I'm not giving anything away by saying he gets home and his home's abandoned. There's no one there. It's completely desolate. But the sense of A, trying to get home, and B, passing through this dream sequence where things just get worse and worse, and it's told very realistically. It's like magic realism. The details are all very accurate, but it's this sort of disorienting sense of surrealism that you are on the back nine of your life and it's going downhill very quickly, but told through a weird kind of lens. I think if you took The Swimmer and All the Chickens Come Home to Roost and blended them together, that would be a pretty accurate description of about 80% of what happened in Mad Men. not description, but an accurate feel, an accurate sense of what I felt as I was watching it. I jotted that down while I was watching it. Oh, these seem familiar. So that's my two cents literary criticism.
While you've been talking about that, I've been looking up...
The Swimmer?
No, the Harlan Ellison story.
Oh, yeah,
All the Birds Come Home to Roost.
Oh, I'm sorry. All the Birds Come Home to Roost.
Birds is, of course, the name for women, so...
Boy, I got that one wrong. Sorry, Harlan. I take back...
Not chickens. So, All the Birds Come Home to Roost is in Shatterday.
Yep.
Is that a book of short stories by Harlan Ellison?
He is most of his books are books of short stories. He's
okay.
Very few novels.
Is that still in print? It looks like it is.
I bet it is.
It was republished in 1980. Mm-hmm. So...
And if you're around the central Illinois area, I've got a copy. I could loan it to you.
Okay. Yeah, it's in Shatterday. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Driftglass. I love you.
I love you,
and
too.
We'll be back next week with more Science Fiction University.